Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis. This is Paulette Young, your host speaking, and we'll be joined by our international speaker, Barbara Coloroso, who's an expert on the topic of parenting, and there's a lot to do with parenting. Tonight, we'll be talking about bullying. Bullying can be harmful to anyone. Using racial slurs or wrong choice of words can be devastating. Someone use words that are harmful. What is the effect of wrong choice of words? Name calling, using wrong choice of words. How harmful can this be? What is happening in our schools with bullying? Barbara Coloroso is an international speaker and author on parenting. Will speak tonight on bullying, and she will tell you a little bit more about herself. We also have Selena Lindsay, which is one of the hosts on the line also. Okay, take it away, Barbara.
Thank you, Paulette. It's really a joy and an honor to be here to talk about what I consider a vital conversation our whole country needs to have, and what bullying is, what it isn't. The book I wrote about it is called The Bully, the Bullied, and the Not-So-Innocent Bystander. William Burroughs said it so beautifully. There are no innocent bystanders. What were they doing there in the first place? But one of the questions you asked me about doing this topic is, why do people choose to bully? And what we have to understand is bullying is a role that kids play. And there are three characters in this tragedy, the bullied, not so innocent bystander. These, again, are only roles they're playing. When I say bully, it's a role a child is playing. The problem is, if they do it long enough, they can become character actors. Just like if I said Henry Winkler to you, you might think the Fonz. But he's a phenomenal Shakespearean actor, and he wrote children's books. But we don't see him like that because we constantly saw him as a fawn. So one of the things we have to do is help young people rewrite their scripts. But let's look at bullies themselves. Again, these are characters we're talking about. They come in all different sizes and shapes. And some are big, some are small, some are bright, some are not so bright. Some are attractive and some are not so attractive. Some are popular and some absolutely are disliked by almost everybody. And you can't always identify bullies by what they look like, but you can pick them out by what they act like. They have their lines and actions down. Their roles are often rehearsed at home. Sometimes they take their cue from the movies they see, the games they play, the peers they hang with, the schools they attend, and the culture that surrounds them. To the untrained eye, it may look as if they're only teasing, just pretending, having a good old-fashioned fist fight. They are not. They are involved in serious acting with serious consequences for themselves, the peers they bully, and the community as a whole. And there are lots of reasons, Paulette, as you had asked, there are lots of reasons some students use their abilities and talents to bully other people. No one factor tells the whole story. They don't come out of the womb as bullies. Their temperament may be a small factor, but so too are young people's home life, school life, and the community and culture, including the media, that permits or encourages such behavior. And four things we know about kids who bully. Number one, they are taught to bully. Some of you may be old enough to remember the movie South Pacific, and in it there's a song, you have to be carefully taught. In other words, you have to be carefully taught to hate before you're 6, 7, or 8, to hate the people your relatives hate. Bullying is a learned behavior. Number two, they bully because they can. They've tried it. They practiced it. They got away with it. Number three is they choose to bully. Not only do they do it because they can, but they made a choice to be mean and cruel. And the fourth is they chose who they are going to bully. And they make choices to use their leadership skills to manipulate, control, dominate, and humiliate those whom they see as a threat to their status or those they see as being less than themselves. They tend to see their targeted peers as objects of scorn, and I mean that quite literally, using them for their own sadistic pleasures and to enhance their own popularity. Martin Buber, the great theologian, said, I am I and you are thou, and we have a common humanity. I'm unique, you're unique, and together we create our common humanity. We're interdependent, interrelated, and interconnected, as Archbishop Desmond Tutu said. However, in bullying, I'm the I, and you become, in my mind, an it. It's that process of dehumanization that renders bullying such a powerful, deadly tool. I work in Rwanda with orphans from the 94 genocide. And one of the things I would tell the young students that I'd be working with is that it's a short walk from hateful rhetoric to hate crimes to crimes against humanity. Genocide is not an unimaginable horror. It was thoroughly imagined, meticulously planned, and horrifically carried out by people who turned other people into its. Armenians were called dogs. Jews were vermin and bacteria eating at the fabric of our humanity. Tutsis were cockroaches. Rohingyas were called worms. And it goes on and on today. So that is why we cannot tolerate in our homes, our schools, our communities, when someone's language dehumanizes another human being. But one of the first things we have to look at, now we looked at why they do it. We also need to look at what bullying is and what it isn't. Especially if those of you who are educators and parents listening this evening, we need to be able to discern the difference between normal, natural, and necessary conflict and bullying. Conflict, you resolve. Bullying, you stop. So what? Let's start with what bullying is not. First of all, it's not a conflict. Two kids fighting over a TV program is not bullying. One child holding another child's arm up their back as they scream in pain is not a conflict. It's bullying. We'll get to that later. It's also not an ignorant faux pas. He runs like a girl. That's so gay. She dipped me. Often indicates an ignorance of the source or bias of the word or phrase or apathy toward the group that's been marginalized, vilified, or discriminated against. And another thing bullying is not is impulsive aggression. Those of you who are raising children who perhaps have ADHD, it's spontaneous, indiscriminate striking out with no intended target. They've just reached their max, and they strike out at a wall, a pillow, or another human being. It's usually a reactionary and emotionally charged event. Now, all three of these, conflicts, ignorant faux pas, and impulsive aggression, are acts that can contribute to the breakdown of healthy human relationships. So we don't just dismiss them or ignore them. We must deal with them appropriately, but they are not bullying. So what is bullying? Bullying is about contempt for another human being. Once I have contempt for you, I can do anything to you and not feel any shame or compassion. I can take a Matthew Shepard, beat him up, tie him to a fence post, leave him to die in Laramie, Wyoming. And when those two young boys were arrested, they said, yeah, but he was gay. James Byrd, Jasper, Texas, drug in the back of a pickup till he was dead. And when the three young men were arrested, they said, yeah, but he was black. Renee Virk, 15 years old, 100 kids knew of her death before her parents and the police. 25 of her, quote unquote, normal classmates cheered those girls on as they broke her arms before they drowned her. And one of the girls said, well, she was brown and ugly and sad I didn't like her. Another said I couldn't stand the sound of her voice. And another one, interestingly, said I was only doing what the other girl told me to do, that one of those not-so-innocent bystanders. So it's about contempt for another human being. Once I dehumanize you, believe me, I can do anything to you and not have the normal feelings of shame or compassion. It's a conscious, deliberate, offensive, malicious, or insulting activity that is intended to humiliate or harm. the targeted person and provide those bullying pleasure in the targeted person's pain. Bullying is about getting pleasure from the pain you inflict. And that's why when a young girl has her brother's arm up the back and the boy is screaming in pain, often we walk in there, and as soon as our daughter sees her, she drops her brother's arm and starts comforting him. And we say, what are you screaming like that for? And the little boy looks at his sister and knows he better keep his mouth shut because he's going to be in trouble if he says anything right now. When you walk out that door, he's in for it, and he knows it. And he says, nothing, Mom. Well, then quit screaming. You and I have just retargeted the target. But step back a moment. When you walked in there, you saw something you wish you hadn't seen. You saw your daughter with a smirk on her face before she saw you. That's bullying. That conscious, willful, deliberate activity intended to harm and getting pleasure. The sad thing is, far often today, it's often overlaid with race, ethnicity, religion, gender, sexuality, sexual identity or orientation, physical or mental ability, weight, allergies, or economic status, which can increase the cruelty and its effect on the targeted person. It's very important that we understand it is not conflict. Conflict, you help young people resolve. Bullying, you must stop. Hold those who are targeting another child accountable and show them a way they can rewrite their script so it doesn't become a character actor theme for them where that's the only thing they know is to use their leadership skills to harm someone. We also then have to stop the bullying and protect those who've been targeted, have a safe place for them. We also have to teach them when we're not around how they can stand up to mean and cruel behaviors. And then we also need to make sure there's somebody they can tell, that they feel safe to tell. Along with that, remember I said not so innocent bystanders. Well, there's a fourth character here that can break this cycle of violence. They're the antithesis of the bully. It's the witness, defender, or someone who stands up to those who have targeted the targeted person. I call these brave-hearted kids. There's a lot of titles that are out there. Like instead of being a bystander, being an upstander, I choose brave-hearted because it takes courage to stand up. When the high-status social bully at 5 years old or at 15 says to all the other girls, I don't like the new girl. You want to be in my group? Don't eat lunch with her. And you say, oh, my goodness, at five? Yes. At five, girls can be mean by trying to socially isolate another human being. I want your daughter to be the one that says, that's mean, that's cruel, and has the courage, and it takes courage, whether she's 5 or 15, to go sit next to the new girl. And she will do that at cost. There'll be no scratches and stickers and stars, catch and be in good awards, lunch with the principal. What she'll probably get is, oh, Miss Goody Two-Shoes, or you're next. And I want your son in the locker room when somebody is targeting another child because of their race or their religion or their gender or physical or mental ability, the big five for hate crimes. What makes a hate crime different than any other crime? It's criminal bullying. I want your son, when that person is targeting another and the other kids are laughing along with the bully, to say, back off, leave him alone. He's not such a bad kid. And he, too, will do that at cost. He'll probably get, what are you, chicken? What do you dislike him? But we want to raise a generation of young people willing to help break this ugly cycle of violence, to be willing to stand up and speak out and step in. Let's look at the four. Yes, we want questions. Yes, any questions?
Yeah, any questions from anyone in the audience that's listening? If not,
and then we'll get into. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
May I?
Yes.
Well, it sounds to me like parents need to start earlier having these kind of conversations before the kids even go to school so that when they see the action, they know what it is as opposed to being caught off guard, so to speak.
I wholly agree. And one of the things I ask parents and my audiences and educators is we have to walk our talk and talk our walk. Walking our
right.
talk, how do we treat hired help? How do we treat somebody moving through the grocery mm-hmm. store a little slower than we'd like them to? How do we treat our new neighbor who maybe has a different faith tradition, has a different language as their first language, eats different foods, wears different clothing? Our children are watching. And I'll go a little more personal here. How do we treat that bigoted relative at the family gathering? Now, we all have bigoted relatives somewhere on the family tree. The problem is some aren't on the branches yet. They're right there at the dinner table spewing bigoted comments, thinly disguised as jokes. Can your children, even very young children, hear you say, I'm bothered by that, or that was racist, or that was sexist, or that was mean, that was cruel? When all the other relatives roll their eyes and say, what, can't you take a joke? Not that kind. And you'll know you've had an impact when you walk back in the dining room and everybody shuts up. But you also had an impact when your mother says, look, it's Uncle George, he's old. As if old, I'm 75. Old is not an excuse for bigoted comments. Can your children see you in front of your mother who's very upset with you, not the person who made the racist or sexist comment? Can you say to your mom, I don't want my children to ever think it's ever okay, no matter what our age is or our status in life, to rip apart another person in such a cruel way? The chances of your son or daughter standing up for that 5-year-old or that 15-year-old has been greatly increased. But just as you said, it's not just walking our talk, it's talking the walk. We have to sit with little ones and talk to them. When the 4-year-old says, Mommy, he's being mean to me. Oh, no, he's just likes you, or he's just playing, and we dismiss it. There's a powerful movie on TV right now that I call both of my daughters. One has an almost 15-year-old girl, and the other has an almost 14-year-old son. I said, I'd love for you to sit down and watch this with them. The movie is Moxie, and it's about how young girls are targeted in schools and put down. And there are some young boys in that school that stand up with them. However, the administrator, one girl who had been harassed by a star, a high-status social bully, a star in that school, she went to the administration, and the administrator, oh, we can't call it harassment, or we have to fill out all these forms for the state. She said, what he was doing is bothering you. No, he was harassing her. And so we have to be willing to stand up. And in the end, it was young people that stood up and opened the eyes of this principal who had been blinded by the high social status in the school of this young boy who had been so horribly mean and cruel, and got others to go along with him. So thank you for that question, because it's very important that you and I not only demonstrate it to our children, but we actually come and talk to them about it. Our young people need to be able to talk to about the good, the bad, and the ugly that is happening in their lives. And we can introduce these topics. I don't use the word bullying very often. I'm using it here to talk to you folks. But I often talk about that was mean, that was cruel, as opposed to that was kind. I want kids to be kind. Bullies can be very nice around adults. They're not kind to the person they're targeting. So I want to impress on my young children that they need to be kind to that person who's being targeted. We also have to be kind to the bully. That doesn't mean we don't have them accountable. We have to call them on what they've done and understand that they can be held accountable, and they also can grow into a different role. So let's look at the 4 ways and 3 means of bullying. There are 4 ways. One is one cruel or malicious act. Now, I purposely added this to my book when so many school districts had used a definition that said it must be continuous and repeated over time. Don't you think once in the toilet should count? Once called an ugly, gross sexual term matters. Once ostracized online is mean and cruel. And so many states and provinces around the world have gone to that it can be a one-time mean and cruel malicious act. We have to act on that and not wait for it to happen continuous and repeat. The second way is the continuous and repeated, the small acts that they do. They build from verbal and social to finally getting away with it, and then it becomes physical. So the continuous and repeated acts is the most common. The third is hazing, not some hazing, all hazing. Hazing by its nature is bullying. It's inviting somebody to be in a group by requiring them to do humiliating and degrading activities, often harmful to themselves or to others. Cyber is the fourth. Digital and technology enhanced is called all of those. Those are the ones that can give us nightmares. And I would recommend that you check out a wonderful resource. It's called Common Sense Media. And they have a lot to offer about the media our kids are exposed to. They also have, from very young age all the way through the teen years, how you can help your young people navigate the online world and how it's become recognizing that our online and offline worlds have merged for this next generation into their way of living. It's they're interconnected there. Now, those four ways can happen with three means. And I mentioned one, the verbal. Verbal is the most common. Boys and girls do this one equally well. You know that adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, is an absolute lie. And just ask Dawn Marie Wesley's mom. Dawn Marie hung herself with her dog's leash and left a suicide note at 14, listing the names of three girls who had verbally tormented her every single day, online and offline. It was the verbal torments that were so horrible for her. And so verbal alone can pack a tremendous wallop, be an entree to the other two, or combined with the other two for an even greater wallop. Physical bullying is the least amount done. I'll guarantee you if you have a child, boy or girl, who's been physically targeted, he or she has been verbally and or socially bullied first. It's time we take verbal bullying seriously. Physical bullying, boys do this more often than girls, although we see it on the rise with our young girls. They often don't need to resort to the physical, though, because they have in their social arsenal something far more powerful, and that's relational or social bullying. You can't come to my party, locking someone out of a chat room, spreading ugly rumors about them, which is verbal and online cruelty as well as social cruelty. So those three are the most powerful tools to humiliate, denigrate, and dehumanize another human being. They're serious. So let's look at what the four markers of bullying that separate the bullying from other acts. There's always an imbalance of power, whether it's size, stature, position, status. There's always an imbalance of power in bullying. There's always the intent to harm. It's not an oops, didn't mean to. They intended. That smirk on that young girl's face as she's pulling her brother's arm up and he's in pain. The threat of further aggression. Targeted kids know just by the way the young girl looked at her brother, he knew he better not say anything. I have seen teachers know something's going down in the hallway, and they walk up, and there's a circle of boys targeting another boy. But when the teacher walks over and says, what's going on? The targeted kid says, oh, nothing. Because he knows as soon as you leave, it'll be worse if he, quote-unquote, snitches on his peers. We have to teach our young people the difference between telling and tattling. telling is something we need to invite our young people to do. And if we can teach them at 4 and 5 that telling is looking for help, tattling is trying to get somebody in trouble. I've always said, if it's going to get somebody in trouble, don't tell me. If it's going to get somebody out of trouble, tell me. If it's ever both, and bullying is both, I need to know. Five-year-olds, get it? I've had little five-year-olds run up and say, Mrs. C, Mrs. C. I say, in, out, or both. And sometimes they put their head down and walk away and say, nah, in trouble. But I've also had little ones come up and say, Mrs. C, Mrs. C. I say, in, out, or both. I don't know. I can't discern it. Yes, five-year-olds can use the big word if you've used it. I said, well, tell me and we'll figure it out together. And if a child is on the swing and he's not supposed to be because he didn't share yesterday, that's going to get him in trouble. Don't tell me. If he's on the swing and he knocks somebody off, tell me. If he happens to get his coat caught and he's hanging on the swing, tell me. That'll get him out of trouble. Even though he wasn't supposed to be on the swing, but to get him in trouble. I always want kids to understand, if it's ever both, I need to know. Now, when you have that threat of further aggression and no adult steps in here or another peer to break that cycle, when it escalates unabated, a fourth marker is added, and that's terror. And terror is not only a means to an end, but an end in itself. You have young people not wanting to go to school. They get headaches and stomach aches, but not on holidays. They need to leave PE class, or they don't show up in PE class. They don't go to the lunchroom. They'd rather not eat during the day and feel faint than go and put up with the harassment they have to deal with in the lunchroom. Now, you say, but why don't young people tell us that they've been targeted? In the handout that you'll be able to download after this, I talk about the bully circle. And in the center, you have a targeted kid. Anyone can be targeted. You can be targeted because you're short, you're tall, you developed early, you developed late, your race, religion, gender, physical or mental ability, economic status, the fact that you're underweight, overweight in somebody's standards, or you have an allergy. The one thing all targeted kids have in common, somebody targeted them. At the very top of the bully circle are those kids who instigate the bullying. They plan it. And they perpetrate it. Those are three roles they can play. Often they do all three. But sometimes an instigator will get other girls to spread an ugly rumor, and they'll get in trouble, and she won't. And so you want to be sure that you caught the one who actually instigated it or planned it. I've seen young boys have a group of his henchmen beat up a smaller boy, because he's about the same size as that smaller boy, and they get in trouble, and they won't ever, quote-unquote, snitch on their peer that instigated it or planned it. Often bullies do all three. They perpetrate it as well. Right below them is an interesting character, and that's the henchman. We didn't raise this kid to be a bully, but we raised him or her to do the please. First they pleased you as a parent, then they pleased their primary teachers. But by the time they get to fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, they're pleasing the powerful peer because they haven't learned to think for themselves. They haven't learned to stand up for values and against injustices. And they go along to get along. Very often it is that kid that's caught. Because they aren't as skilled at it as the bully is. How do I know the difference? It's often by how the parents receive the information their kid's been bullying. And when a parent says, oh, my goodness, I didn't raise him this way. I can't believe he did that. Oh, I'm so sorry. What can we do? Then I know we probably caught the henchman. However, bullying tends to run in the family. And when you run across a parent who has taught the kid to bully well, you'll often hear, well, the other kid probably had it coming to him. It's just a conflict, you know. He gives as good as he gets. All the excuses that they would give, and you know you probably caught the bully. Right below the henchman is the active supporter. Those are those young people that whip out their cell phones and video it, not to report it, but to post it on TikTok or Instagram so everyone can laugh at the targeted kid's pain. They didn't bully. They are part of the problem. Then right below them is a passive supporter. I want young people to know these are a variety of roles you can get pulled into. It's called the trap of comradeship. And you can get pulled into that. And you say, but I didn't do any of that. But you downloaded that TikTok and shared it with others. Or you just sat there and laughed at that other person's pain. You're still part of the problem. And right at the very bottom is a deadly lot, which, sad to say, can be you and me as adults. And that's the disengaged onlooker who writes it off and say, oh, boys will be boys. Girls just want to be mean. It's part of growing up. No, bullying is not normal, natural, or necessary. It should not be a part of a child's childhood. On the upswing is the potential witness. That is the kid. As the one person asked questions who said, maybe we need to teach them. Absolutely. We've taught them to stand up. But they're afraid of getting hurt themselves. They're afraid of becoming a new target of the bully. They're afraid of doing something that will only make the situation worse, or they just do not know what to do. As legitimate as these reasons don't shore up the self-confidence or self-respect that's eroded when someone witnesses a bullying incident and is unable or unwilling to respond effectively to stop the cruelty. All too often, these fears and lack of skill can turn into apathy. That's a potent friend of contempt. Contempt grows best in a climate of indifference. So those are four valid reasons. And in your handout, you'll see 9 lousy excuses. Well, he's not my friend. She's not my friend. She had it coming. None of those are good excuses for not stopping in, but we also have to honor the fact that there are 4 reasons that young people give that are valid reasons. And the last character is that antithesis, the brave-hearted kid, the one who will be the witness, the resistor, the defender. The witness tells an adult. The resistor stands up to that bully, say, back off, leave him alone, is in the locker room. And the defender is that young girl who goes and sits next to the new girl and defends her, knowing that others may ostracize both the bullied child and her. Any questions on what we just covered? I know that's pretty heavy stuff there. Anybody? I'm sorry, I can't hear.
At what age does a child learn to bully?
4.5 to 5 years old. 4.5 to 5. Girls tend to do it more readily than boys at first. Boys get in fights a lot when they're young. They're rarely mean or cruel unless they've grown up in an environment where they've witnessed mean and cruel or experienced it themselves. That would be our bully. They've taken it from their younger or older siblings. And believe me, it can be a younger sibling that can be mean and cruel. It's more often than not an older sibling. But they've actually witnessed it. So you might see young boys at an early age using physical because they're not as verbal as girls are at that age. But verbal bullying is about 4.5 for girls, 5 for boys. And so I like to work in preschools with using it very humorously. And I always, with younger kids, play the role of the mean and cruel so it isn't labeling a kid. When we get through middle school and high school, I often have volunteers help me out on this and always reframe it in the end. But it's about 4 and 5, which is sad. And we need to be talking to kids about it. We need to be modeling for them. And when somebody's mean and cruel, we don't write it off. There's a movie about he's just not that into you. And at the very beginning scene, a little boy is being mean and cruel to a little girl in the sandbox. And her mom says, oh, he must like you. So guess what kind of boy she dated? You know, it was not cool as she got older because she had been taught that when they're mean and cruel, it's a sign of affection, which is not. It's not. Any other questions?
Yes, Barbara, we kind of had an accident.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We kind of had an incident happen. Some of what you've just been talking about accurately describes and answers some of my questions. However, let me tell you what happened. I have the 3 grandchildren, and they're all stair steps, 7, 8, and 9. The 9-year-old is autistic, and his brother is 8 years old. And apparently, these two fight all the time. They were in the hallway. We were into another room, locked away, and exactly some of the things you described happened. The 8-year-old decided to choke his brother out, and then his sister participated in helping him do so. After he couldn't quite choke him out, his little sister helped him standing on his neck, and he blacked out. And we didn't find out about it until these children went home to their mom. So some of this I have questions about. As I said previously, you answered some of the questions, because it's true that the autistic one is sometimes the bully. He's the one that picks on his little brother a little bit. But he usually leaves him alone because he's a real meek, mild-acting person. But we've been trying to figure out what in the world happened here. And something else you mentioned, the little girl, she loves to look at horrible things on television. There's not a lot we can do about it because it happens at her mother's house. So they got this idea from watching television. And actually the reason, after he blacked out, they poured water on him, and we asked them, how did you know how to do that? They found it on television.
Yes. Now, you brought up several things. First of all, I want you to know, was my graduate work. And autistic kids often get in trouble for striking back. They rarely are the instigator of a bullying scenario, very rare. But they often are tormented, taunted by their peers, and finally can't take it anymore. However, it sounds like the 8-year, and when you said they fight a lot, I would like to examine that fight, because I would suspect that the child with autism didn't instigate it, or that he lacked social skills. They very often lack social skills and interactive skills, and that's why we work so hard with avatars and the like, because we can help them understand how to relate more effectively for others. What may come very naturally for you and me does not come as naturally for a child with autism. Now, the interesting thing that we have found in research with autistic children is what's going on in their brain when they look at your face or my face. They identified themselves in a mirror, probably at the same age other children identified themselves in a mirror. But when they read your face or my face, it's just like reading the face of a clock. And that's why there's been tremendous research done in avatars with the child's face on it. We can teach them a lot of good social skills and the like. I want to look very closely at what we might have considered a fight is if it wasn't an attack. And, you know, he didn't know the social skills, so the other kid didn't strike back, decided to be mean to him. And part of it is ignorance. Part of it's not knowing how to deal with their cousin who has autism. So a little instruction needs to be there. But what I would say, especially about the two that are witnessing a lot of media that's violent, is I would not leave them alone with my child. I would be right on top of it. There will be other children that your child with autism can safely be around and can learn social graces and social skills. And what we found with children who have autism, they have trouble with empathy. That's resonating another person's feeling. But they often are far better at sympathy, being open to somebody else's pain and wanting to relieve that suffering. Sympathy has gotten a bad rap. Empathy and sympathy are not the same. You don't want sympathy. You don't want empathy on a 911 call. And yet many people raise their hand and say, yeah, we do. No, we don't. We don't want somebody saying, oh, I know what it's like to have your house burned down. Mine burned down last week. We don't need that. We need somebody to say, hang in there. We're here for you. We're going to be there. That sympathy, being open to somebody else's pain. And that's an interesting thing with many children, especially higher on the spectrum, that they have a lot of sympathy and wanting to relieve the suffering of animals, wanting to relieve the suffering of another human being. However, in your situation, I would watch like a hawk. I would try to find other children. Oftentimes, children with autism can relate very much to another child with autism. I had a class of kids with autism, and their ability to sympathize with one another and to help one another was amazing. And I would not, if they're choking that kid out, they've gone beyond the verbal and the social. They're at the physical, cruel, be mean to him. And I would just either say, you know what, your kids are mean and cruel to our son, and maybe a daughter, I didn't even ask, but very often it's a son. And I just can't have them here unless an adult's present, and preferably somebody who's not their parent, because their parents obviously doesn't know what to do either. Maybe you could help them out there. But it's not a fight, and that's what we have to rearrange our language for that. Now you have an alternative, that it wasn't a conflict. And kids do fight. There is such a thing as civil rivalry, but there's not that imbalance of power and intent to harm. Somebody's choking somebody out, that's an intent to harm. Is that helpful? I hope.
And a lot of it does, because we were just bow-wowed with, you know, how could something like this happen? And just as you said, they had no feelings about it. They felt it was something they had to do.
That they were quite able to do. They could do it because they could. And that's why I would never leave them alone with a child that was in a position of having less power.
And we see how it could have worked, because he's so much bigger than they are. I mean, he's three times their size.
He's a big teddy bear. He's a teddy bear, you know. And so, you know, and when he strikes back, he's the one who will get in trouble. Because it probably hurt somebody when he strikes back, because he's had it.
Wow.
And that's why we have to stop it before that happens. We have to be in tune with it, on top of it. And know, one of the beauties of those of you listening is you know now that there is a difference between conflict and bullying. And that if you don't mislabel it, you can deal more effectively with it. So I want to talk about the language that can lead to more severe stuff, and the difference between teasing and taunting. And this is on your handout as well. Teasing is laughing with, taunting is laughing at. In teasing, you and I can tease one another, peers can tease one another, siblings can tease one another, an adult can tease their teenager. It needs to be important that it's laughing with them, though. It allows one teasing and the person teased to swap roles. I can tease you, you can tease me. You may be better at verbal, but boy, I can find those birthday candles that don't blow out. But taunting is laughing at. I'm the bully. I found birthday candles that explode in your face and get great pleasure from seeing you distressed, at your makeup being ruined, your hair, and the like. Teasing is not intended to hurt or harm. In taunting, the laughing at, it's intended to hurt or cause harm. In teasing, it maintains the dignity of both parties. In taunting, it's humiliating, cruel, demeaning, and bigoted comments thinly disguised as jokes. And in teasing, you and I or the children are poking fun in a lighthearted, clever, and benign way. In taunting, we're laughing at the targeted person, not with them. We may be laughing with a bunch of the not-so-innocent bystanders, but it's directed at the targeted person. In teasing, it's meant to get both people to laugh. In taunting, it's meant to diminish the targeted person's sense of self. In teasing, it's innocent motive, but all of us, no matter our age, have probably said something in a teasing way, truly teasing, lighthearted, at the wrong time, wrong place, didn't go over so well. And the look on the other, you knew you blew it. But it was innocent in motive. But what you do when you see that, when you read their body language, you stop. When the person teased is upset or objects to the teasing, even says, please don't say that. And, you know, I know one of my friends, I've had glasses since I was 2 and a half. And in school, they used to call us four eyes. But I had a dear friend who, when I'd be really upset, say, look at this, you do. You have 1, 2, 3, 4. And we'd laugh. But there were some times when I had just had it. I didn't want to hear it. And she would stop and apologize and say, oh, I get it. And she finally just stopped even bringing that up and knowing how much it hurt. However, with taunting, it induces a fear of further taunting. It can be a prelude to physical bullying, and both the target and the bully know that. It's sinister in motive, and it continues, especially when targeted people become distressed or object to it. Now, do you notice those last two? It's innocent motive with laughing with. It's sinister in motive when you're laughing at. It stops when you're teasing. It continues when you're bullying. And so I would ask you, as educators or parents, why on earth is in so many anti-bullying programs do we teach a targeted kid to say, please stop, that hurts? That's exactly what the bully intended to do. No, we have to teach him how to not be passive, certainly not be aggressive, because they'll be the ones that get in trouble, but to be assertive, to be able to say things like, that was mean and cruel, not your mean and cruel. We identify the behavior. That was mean and cruel. I don't need this. I'm out of here. And giving them, and if they can't get the words out, as so many kids who have been repeatedly targeted, I tell them to do self-talk. I want them to roll their shoulders around and down, stand strong, take a deep breath, and walk away and say to myself, I'm a decent, caring human being. She's sure getting her needs met in a lousy way, which puts the problem where it belongs, on the kid who's doing the taunting. Any questions on teasing and taunting? Anybody? If not, I'll move on to...
No. A small child would know teasing, correct?
They know what teasing is. They know what taunting is because they've listened to it.
When,
they've
like,
heard
say
it.
a five or six year old, or 6 year old would teasing and taunting.
Well, 5 year old, I explained to them the difference between the. I've had little ones come up to me with tears in their eyes and say they were teasing me. And I'll say, sweetheart, I bet they weren't. I bet they were taunting you because you wouldn't be crying if they were teasing you. And then we have a lesson on the difference between teasing and taunting. When a girl says to the other girls at 5, if you want to be in my group, don't let her in our group. That's an ugly dress. Boy, that food you brought to school stinks. That's taunting.
Oh.
Or inviting her into the group and then moving her chair out or putting a backpack so she can't sit down. You know, yeah, 5 years old.
Yeah, but those
we've got to stop it.
Those are learned behavior from
someone
older, correct? Other than that, they couldn't do it.
Exactly. You have to be taught to be mean. It's a learned behavior. And if it can be taught, we can teach kids to do something different. Now,
when do you chastise the parents that are teaching these bad behaviors?
Well, that's what I do for a living. Is I work with parents. I'm speaking this Friday in Jefferson County to paraprofessionals and parents. On what they can do. And I want to just briefly talk to you about that. In your handout, by the way, it's a 63-page download. You can download. There's also a very small summary of all this at our website, kidsareworthit.com. But all of this is in there. And I want to talk to you about the do's and don'ts when any child is targeted. First of all, don't minimize. Rationalize or explain away the bullying. Oh, boys will be boys. Girls just want to be mean. I don't think she knew what she was doing. Don't rush into solving, oh, we want to. We want to wring that bully's neck or any bystander and let it happen. But what we are saying to the child right there is I don't believe you're capable of handling this. And I'll get into that in a moment. Don't rush in to solve it. You stop it, but you don't solve it. Don't tell the targeted child to avoid or ignore those doing the bullying. How often we say, well, just ignore them or avoid them, and they're taking a different way to school. The bullies will find them. And when you say ignore, what happens by this third scene in this tragedy is it begins to eat at the child's sense of self. And they start beating themselves up. I am dumb. I am stupid. I am no good. Don't tell this child to fight back. It's not a fight. Defend themselves, yes. Fight back, no. Because bullies are cowards. They don't pick on somebody they couldn't win, beat up. They pick on somebody they knew they could get. And don't confront the perpetrators or their parents alone, because it tends to run in the family. If a child's being targeted at school and you want to meet with the administration about it and they say, well, let's get the parents in here, make sure there's another adult in the room that will advocate for your child. So let's look at what you do. First thing you say to a kid who's been targeted, whether you are the parent, the caregiver, the nurturer, the educator, I hear you. I'm here for you. I believe you. Bullies try to get you not to believe the targeted kid. You are not in this alone. Bullies try to isolate the child. But we have to reaffirm, I hear you. I'm here for you. I believe you. You are not in this alone. Number two, it's not your fault. What they did to you is their problem, not yours. The third is there are things you can do, and I'm here to help you. I'm going to help stop it in its tracks, and I'm going to work with you on good assertive lines since verbal bullying is the most common. I'm going to talk to you about where it's safe to go when you feel scared. I'm going to talk to you about how you can tell. I'm going to talk to you about surrounding yourself with young people who have empathy, who have compassion, who will stand up for you. And sometimes it's a buddy, especially with children with special needs, that they have a buddy who is a very caring human being who will be right there, but often a very popular kid in school who's not misusing their leadership skills. Then we have to notify, if we're educators, the parents or guardians of the targeted child, the perpetrator, and anyone else who participated in the bullying, it's important that they all know. What I will not do is put a targeted kid in with all the kids who targeted them together. That's really ganging up on that child. One-on-one, the kids play different roles. They need to be accountable for it. And I talk about restorative practices. Anyone who has been participating in the targeting of a child have three R's: restitution, resolution, and reconciliation. Restitution, you have to own and fix what you did the best of your ability. And I don't want to hear a half-hearted apology. I want you to tell me what you're going to do to keep it from happening again and how you're going to try to heal with the person you've harmed. Those three things. The younger we can do this, the more effective they are, but you can still do restorative practices. It takes longer, and it's more involved with older kids. But if we don't do it, they grow up to be adult bullies, and they're no fun to be around. And they certainly don't enhance anything in our society. And the last thing we need to do is make sure that the bullying is reported. But there also are ways we as parents and educators can help kids have antidotes to bullying. You need a strong sense of self. Notice I didn't say self-esteem. It's the I, thou, and common humanity again. A strong sense of self recognizes my own uniquenesses, my liabilities, and my gifts, and the other person's uniquenesses, and how we can do this together, how we can care deeply, share generously, help willingly. which are the antidotes to the three most virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity, hating other human beings, hoarding, me, mine, and more, and harming through our lying and cheating and stealing. And so a strong sense of self, knowing I have agency, that I can make a difference, that I can stand up for myself and I can stand up for others and I can stand against injustices. Being a friend, it's important that we teach our young people how to be friends, not frenemies, not 500 friends on Instagram, but how to truly interact in a friendship. There's a good children's book out by Trevor Romaine called Click Ponies, Another Baloney, and it talks about how to be a good friend. And having at least one good friend who is there for you, or a buddy with a child with special needs, but somebody's got to be there for you. And the ability to successfully get into a group and know when to get out. Those are the things we can help our young people develop as antidotes to bullying. Then we have to rewrite the script for those who have participated in the bullying, intervene with the three R's, create opportunities for them to do some good, nurture their empathy. Maybe it's with animals or plants or nature. But we have to somehow find a way to nurture their empathy. Engage in more constructive, energizing activities. Instead of cruising a hallway, they're cruising a river, climbing a rock wall. Teach them friendship skills. Bully have phenomenal leadership skills. They make great gang leaders. They have lousy friendship skills. So we have to teach that to them and invite them to do some good in their community. I say that both for the kid who's targeted and the one who is doing the targeting. I had a parent come up to me and say, you know, we have gotten this kid out of school, that school, because it was so awful, because kids were being mean to him. We got him counseling. We got him some new opportunities to do. What more can we do? I said, what's he doing? What do you mean? He was the one targeted. I said, yes. What's he doing? Is he working at Habitat for Humanity? Is he working at a nursery? Is he working with the vet, cleaning animals? You know, what's he doing? Because James Nestroy said it so beautifully, do good because good is good to do. It's helpful for both the kids who are the perpetrators and those who are the targets. Kids who stand up and speak out already have that sense of empathy and compassion. But every day to develop in our children the ability to care more deeply, share more generously, and help more willingly will help break this ugly cycle of violence. Any other questions?
Do anyone have any questions? Let's see.
Not a question, but I'd just like to thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. And if you go online, during the pandemic, so many parents didn't have access to tools and the like, so I got permission to combine all from my bullying book and add a few more things for educators and parents who were in the process of educating their children at that point and put it together in that 68-page document. If you go online and look at the very top right-hand corner of my website, you will see free essential guide to bullying. Feel free to download it, share it with your educators who are working with your children, any caregivers, to that relative who has children who are stomping on somebody's neck. It might be helpful for them. And I hope this is a good resource for you. You can always get the full-length book, but believe me, this is quick. And you can get through it. And it also has how to report it to a school when your kid's been targeted. And you will. There's a part in there about why kids don't tell. They're afraid. They're ashamed. They don't think anyone will help them or can help them. And so when we recognize that, we have to be their ally. We have to be their support.
And Barbara's website, again, is www.kidsareworthit.com. www.kidsareworthit.com. And we're also, Barbara has also been a part of the Fathers and Family Coalition of America, and they have a great conference coming up this April, April 24th through the 27th. The CEO of that great conference is Dr. James Rodriguez. He's of Fathers and Family Coalition of America. We're going to have a lot of great speakers there during that time. They also have what they
phenomenal conference. It's a phenomenal conference.
Yes, along with Men-to-Men Cafe. If you want to get a hold of Dr. Rodriguez, you can call 424-225-1323. This will be their 24th conference, and people are coming from all over the world, anywhere from Australia, Africa, Japan, and different places. So, and throughout the United States, people. Great, great conference. Barbara has been a part of that great, great conference, talking on the various topics. And she and herself, as a woman, is very phenomenal. And an international speaker. Parenting. So go up on her website, and you can purchase the books, I believe, off of Amazon. Am I correct, Barbara?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
But the other is free. It's there for you to use.
Yes. And she does have a book on bullying along with six other books. Are there any questions before we end the show? If not, I just want to thank you, Barbara. A lot of information. And it looks like there's a lot of work to be done ahead. And so I asked about the parents because the kids, these are learned behaviors. That's what I'm understanding. They weren't born that way. Someone taught them how to be this way. And so now you have to teach them how to be. I remember in one of my classes at the college, I was saying you got to teach your teenage girl certain things. And I remember the mother in the class said, how do I teach my daughter when I don't know what to do?
Yeah.
So it begins, it sounds like it's twofold. It's not just the child, it's the parent that has to know. And it's like generation after generation, certain things go and you think it's okay, like, I'm not in favor of beating kids to death and stuff, switches and cords. And those are learned behaviors. My dad broke that. He didn't believe in you had to hit kids to make them change or stop doing something. He just didn't. So I wasn't a child raised with being beat or hit or. And yet some people, especially from a biblical standpoint, think it's okay to to unmercifully do all that stuff. And if you learn that. So it's pretty much how the bullying, they learn that. And then the unfortunate thing, the bully's being bullied. Am I correct?
That it's oftentimes we can have a bullied bully, yes.
Yeah, and the bully
and those
coming,
are probably the
saddest. If the child learned to bully, then the parent had to bully them, correct or not? Someone's bullied
someone. Well, they learned it. Some learned it from media. Some learned it from media. Some learned it from their peers. Some learned it in the settings they're in. It's more complicated than they just learned it from their parents, but sometimes they did.
And they can retaliate, too.
Non-person.
A non-one.
Yeah. Yeah, they can. And that's not pretty.
No, it's not. Okay. Well, thank you, Barbara, for
being willing to
do this particular topic, which is not an easy one, and we're watching it spread throughout our country right now. It's being addressed again, but city by city, state by state. It looks like there's this, I don't know if it never stopped in the first place or the media is giving it more attention now again. So I don't know.
Well, it's time it's be done.
Yes, and thank God we have people like you that can address this.
Thank you.
Barbara will be
Thanks for the
on again
opportunity.
Probably in the month of April. I thank you for being willing to come and tackle this particular topic. Thank you, Barbara.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Paulette. Bye-bye.
And if, bye. So if there's not any more questions, I'm going to go ahead and close the show. And I'll be with you again next Tuesday, and we'll have another speaker from the conference for the Fathers and Family Coalition of America, their 24th conference. The address for that conference starting on the 24th is 5711 Century Boulevard at the Hilton Airport. That's down by the airport in Los Angeles, California. Thank you.